Support for this podcast is provided by That Cast Creative. Brand your business and connect with your audience by creating a custom podcast. Learn more at thatcast.com.
Discover the growing lineup of That Cast Network podcasts and videocasts at thatcast.com.
Stephon Herbert, why am I sticking around? Nobody has showed me any loyalty. This guy's had three coaches, three play callers in three different seasons. And he's supposed to stick around because he loves Oregon? I'm sure he loves his teammates, but that paycheck is very, very influential when it comes to the NFL.
That Cast Network presents The No Huddle, an in-depth and fun trip through the 2018 Oregon football season with host Justin Myers.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome into another edition of the No Huddle podcast. I am your host, Justin Myers. As always, we are a production of That Cast Network, and you can download and subscribe to the podcast at thatcast.com. As we've been doing the last couple of episodes, some housekeeping just to get underway. Find us on iTunes if you haven't already, or you can find us on Spotify. As always, you can go to thatcast.com, but rate and review. Let people know that you like the podcast. It helps us out promoting it and getting it out there so we can continue to build the podcast. The numbers every single week are going up, up, up. So I appreciate everybody who's going out, spreading the word about the podcast, who goes on iTunes and rates and reviews it and is telling friends, family. And the only thing I ask every single week is just tell two strangers about the podcast. Coming up a little bit later, I'll go through the Pac-12 slate, some important non-conference games for the Pac-12 this weekend. And I've got a Friday Q&A all locked and loaded. But we start with this California game for Oregon and the three things we need to know. And first and foremost, as probably all of you know, how does this team bounce back emotionally? Is this a mature Oregon football team? That's the first thing we need to know. How mature is this team? Because I don't think there's any doubt when you look at the rest of the conference, if you've used your eyeballs, if you've watched enough football throughout the Pac-12, that Oregon is right there with USC, with Colorado, with Washington, and they prove that they're right there with Stanford in terms of talent. Talent-wise, Oregon has no problems. The problems are maturity, and you saw that on Saturday, the way they couldn't close out a big game against Stanford, and I think a lot of that was being a little too jacked up. The moment got a little bit too big for them. So now you have to be able to buckle up your bootstraps, get on the road, and face Cal. So how mature is this team? Because immature teams let a team or a game like Stanford beat you twice. Immature teams don't do well on the road. Immature teams have a letdown from one week to the next. And that should be, I think, a little bit of a worry if you're an Oregon fan, because you go back to that San Jose State game. I said it then. They were sleepwalking through that game simply because they were looking ahead to Stanford. That's kind of the sign of an immature team. They were looking ahead to Stanford. Now, after Stanford going on the road, was the Cardinal a wake-up call for Oregon, or was it just a gut punch that is going to have a 2 to 3 week lingering effect? You've seen that in college football. There are plenty of teams that go around and take a gut punching loss like that, and it just hangs around and hangs around and hangs around. So the first thing we need to know on Saturday, and we're not going to know it probably until Sunday because of this ridiculous 7:30 kickoff, but is this a mature Oregon team? Is this a team that buys into what Mario Cristobal and the coaching staff is undoubtedly telling them all week, that you have to put it behind them? College football is so fun in this way because the talent levels from team to team at the top end of college football isn't all that different. I mean, you saw Stanford. You saw Oregon. If you've watched the Pac-12, you've seen Washington and USC. The talent level isn't all that different. All those teams have kids that can play. The difference was Stanford is a team that year in and year out has been in championship situations and in games like that. And when Oregon gave them a little bit of breath, a little bit of a glimmer of hope, that team pounced on it, and Oregon kind of crumbled. Because Stanford's a mature team. It's a mature program. Oregon's a program that has gone through 3 years of massive growing pains. Herbert's kind of put a Band-Aid on some glaring issues, and two really good recruiting classes have helped out, but two good recruiting classes means you've got a young, immature team, and you saw that. Can they do some growing up from week to week? So that's the first thing I'm going to be looking for in what we need to know from the Ducks on Saturday. Second thing I'm going to be looking for is, how does this team perform on the road? Because we have no earthly idea. I mean, it's going to be October next week, and Oregon is taking its first trip outside of Autzen Stadium. And this is a weird game. I said this earlier. This Cal game, especially after what happened last week to Stanford, as an Oregon fan, scares me more than the Washington game coming up in just a couple of weeks. I know it sounds a bit ridiculous, but think about it. Oregon's going to have a week off, essentially 2 weeks to prepare for Washington. It's a home game at Autzen. Everybody's going to get jacked up. You're going to feed off the energy, and you're going to know what's coming at you with the Huskies. It's also a rivalry game. But with Cal, you have to kind of create your own energy, create your own juice, as coaches say. Is that what the kids are saying now? I think they're saying that. You got to create your own juice. Anybody that's ever been to Berkeley, Strawberry Canyon, and has seen that dead stadium, especially when Cal, I mean, they're undefeated, they're ranked, but the fan base at Cal, the fan base at Berkeley just doesn't rally around that team. So you're going on the road. It's a 7:30 kickoff, which my theory, and I've said it far too much, and it seems like almost an obsession of mine, but college kids love routine. They love routines. Night games throw kids out of routines. You go on the road, travel, spend Friday night in a hotel, and you get up, and they've got all day Saturday before they even get to the stadium. There's a reason why those Pac-12 after dark games seem to have weird things happening. Those night games are tough for teams, especially for road teams, because you're just hanging out in a hotel or you're hanging out in a big conference room when all you want to do is just get up and get out and play. So can this team get it done on the road? Because they've never traveled this season. Cal is a weird place because it's going to be kind of dead. I mean, I think most football players will tell you, you would much rather go into a hostile environment than an environment that's just dead. It's a 7:30 kickoff, and things can go wrong. Plus, how does Cristobal, as a head coach, handle going on the road? Other than the Las Vegas Bowl, Cristobal and this staff hasn't taken a team on the road yet. What's the itinerary? What's the plan? So many unknowns for this team heading into the game this weekend against Berkeley. But I think the most important thing we need to learn is going to be, can CJ Verdell bounce back and have a productive game? Because I think Oregon proved on Saturday he's going to be the number one back. Tony Brooks-James is injured, likely not going to play. Verdell already proved that he was the every down back for the Ducks. Can he bounce back from that fumble? I mean, think about that. You know, the last play in regulation that he had, he fumbled the game away. Young player. Now he's going on the road. Can he bounce back and become a productive back? I said it for the last couple of weeks. Oregon on offense needs a go-to guy for Herbert. In the first three games, they just didn't have it. Fortunately for them, they played three cupcakes and it didn't matter. And they were trying to find that guy. They found their receiver go-to guy. Now they need to find the go-to guy when it is third and three, somebody they can trust with the football. Verdell's the most talented back they have. Can he bounce back emotionally? Because again, this is why college football creates such crazy upsets, why you can't predict the future, because they're college kids and college kids are emotional. And the emotions of the game get to you. So can CJ Verdell continue to be a go-to guy on the offensive side of the ball? So those are the three things you need to know by the end of this weekend. And this is a tricky, tricky game. I mean, this is why they say trap games. And anybody that says, oh, trap games don't matter, it's a myth, trap games don't count. Yes, trap games exist for this reason and this reason only. Oregon's a young team. They were on the verge of taking control of the Pac-12 North. I mean, they were 3 inches away. And now you have to bounce back and go on the road against an undefeated Cal team that we don't know much about because they haven't played anybody either. They're coming off of a bye, 7:30 game late at night in what's probably going to be a pretty dead stadium. And you have to kind of create your own energy. You know, I said this earlier this week on my show that very rarely, other than one caveat, other than for the paycheck, but very rarely are there times where I would ever want to trade places with a college football coach. The paycheck is about it, because I don't have the patience to deal with everything that a lot of college football coaches have to deal with. But there's one time when I'm a little bit envious of the college coaches, and that's after a horrible loss like Oregon had. I know you're thinking, why would you want to be in Mario Cristobal's shoes or any of those coaches' shoes after that horrible loss to Stanford? Because they don't have a choice. They got practice the next day. You got to show up and you got to get this team going and move on and move forward. Meanwhile, fans, we all have to sit and wallow in it for an entire week. Luckily, Oregon doesn't have a bye week. They at least get another game. But you got to sit and think about that loss and how close it was and what could have been for the entire week. The coaches, they got to come up with a practice plan for Sunday. So I'm a little bit envious of Mario Cristobal after that loss, because we've all sat and had to think about, man, if they would have just, they could have just snapped the ball. If Herbert could have just fallen on it, if Verdell would have just not stretched out and tried to get that extra yard. Meanwhile, the coaches have moved on. Crazy things happen in college football. I think Oregon's still in the mix in the Pac-12 North, but again, this, I keep saying it over and over and over again, and it seems like I keep making this point week in and week out, but it's like, what are we going to learn about this team? This is where I think we really learn. This is where we really learn about this team. Is this team tough? Is this team mature? Is this team a championship caliber team? Talent-wise, no doubt. This team is a championship-level team talent-wise, no doubt. But can they suck it up, get on the road, and get a win against Cal? Because Vegas doesn't think so. Vegas has got Oregon as a 1.5 favorite in this game. 1.5 favorite. So lots of things to learn, but I think you're going to learn more about Oregon this week than we ever did last week. I knew Herbert was great. I knew Oregon was going to be able to compete with Stanford. I thought Oregon was a better team than Stanford, and they're 3 inches away from being that. None of that happened on Saturday surprised me the way it ended did, but none of the first half of the game surprised me at all. Now we learn, can this team deal with some adversity when things aren't going your way? They didn't deal well with it against Stanford at the end of the game. Can they deal with it against Cal this weekend? There we go. That is the three things that we are going to need to know by the end of this game. When I come back, we're going to go over the Pac-12 slate, take a look at two big, important non-conference games. Can the Pac-12 redeem itself after the horrific first 2 weeks of the college football season that I think put it in fifth place of the Power Fives? We'll talk about that and go through the rest of the conference slate coming up next. This is the No Huddle Podcast. I am your host, Justin Myers. As always, we are a production of the That Cast Podcast Network. Price Financial Group.
Navigating through today's financial investment world can seem pretty scary. Now, here's the good news. Chuck Price, president of Price Financial Group Wealth Management, introduces a new revolutionary concept that will change how you invest now and in the future. It's called Asset Lock. Asset Lock monitors your investment accounts 24/7, 365, and alerts you when action needs to be taken. And now, Chuck Price offers Asset Lock. At Price Financial Group Wealth Management, we believe all our clients deserve to have Asset Lock monitoring their accounts. So call Chuck today or online at pfgwm.com and learn how you can get Asset Lock on your accounts today for free. Price Financial Group Wealth Management, because the smart investor knows what you don't know can hurt you.
Simplify.
Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000.
Want to advertise on this podcast or one like it and reach a targeted and engaged audience? Go to thatcast.com to start reaching our audience.
Welcome back to the No Huddle Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Myers, and it's now time to look at the matchups that matter and the Pac-12 slate, because there are two games that are key for the conference if they want to get back into the mix into the college football playoff. Because I think if we're all honest, as we sit right now, the champion of the Big Ten, the Big 12, the SEC, and the ACC probably would all have an advantage over the champion of the Pac-12. And all things being equal, if you are rating out the conferences, the Pac-12, because of some of the disastrous losses early on in the season, probably ranks fifth of the Power Five. But they could get back into contention with a couple of wins this weekend. Most importantly, Stanford. Stanford heading to Notre Dame. They are 4-0, Notre Dame, number 8 in the country. It's going to be another nationally televised game. Of course, it's one of those Notre Dame games on NBC where they get all of the money. But if Stanford can go on the road after beating Oregon at Autzen and then going on the road to Notre Dame and getting a big win, the Pac-12, but more specifically Stanford, can bounce back into the college playoff picture. If Stanford beats Notre Dame, they are right in the mix of the college football playoff. And I think if they run the table, I think Stanford gets in. Especially if Oregon continues to play well, that win at Autzen is going to be a feather in their cap all season long. And Stanford was able to miss some early landmines that some other Pac-12 teams just didn't miss. So that is a huge, huge game, not just for Stanford, but for the entire Pac-12 conference and upping that strength of schedule. The other important game is BYU at Washington. And it's important for one reason. I don't think the Pac-12, if Washington handles BYU, gets a little bump here. But this is, again, one of those landmine games, one of those, silly trap games that if Washington were to somehow lose, it just is another hit against the Pac-12. So Stanford can do an awful lot with a win against Notre Dame and put themselves into the college football playoff. Washington has to beat BYU and has to beat them handily, because you got a 17-point spread in that game. Look, BYU is the number 20 team in the country. They've got wins against Wisconsin, at Camp Randall, and they're a 17-point dog in Seattle. Somebody in the desert knows something I don't know, because that is a huge, huge point spread for this game. But if Washington doesn't win handily and show that they are still a premier team in the Pac-12, it's going to be another gut punch to the conference. Those are what's crazy is, at this point in the season, the two most important games for this conference are non-conference games. But Stanford can loft itself into the college football playoff, and Washington has to beat BYU to prevent another hit against the Pac-12. Because if Washington loses that game, then nobody other than Stanford's getting into the playoff. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if the SEC champion has 3 losses. Nobody else is getting in. The weird Friday night game that I cannot stand and I wish they would never schedule, tonight you've got UCLA at Colorado, and it just get. I think it gets worse and worse for Chip Kelly. Because I think Colorado is the best team in the South, and UCLA, even though they got the week off, they got to travel to Boulder with that young team, turmoil. Chip Kelly doesn't even come close to getting his first win. I like Colorado in that game, and Chip is crazy. But Chip Kelly's return to college football likely going to start with an 0-4 start. The other interesting game is going to be Utah at Washington State. Utah's sitting at 2-1. Washington State is at 3-1 after they got the field goal blocked against USC on that Friday night game last week. But Washington State, who plays in the North, and I think the North is a better division than the South, that goes without saying. But Washington State in the North is a home dog to Utah. And I don't understand what Vegas sees in Utah, which is why that number kind of piqued my interest. If Washington State can take care of business offensively, Utah's not going to score. I just don't see Utah having the firepower offensively to score in this conference right now. So I think Washington State wins as a home dog against Utah in the Palouse and gets back into the mix, into the Pac-12 North. The other game is Oregon State. Unfortunately for them last week, for the Beavs, it doesn't get any better. The Beavs' best possible chance at getting a Pac-12 win was at home against Arizona. Arizona's one of the worst teams in the conference. Oregon State got them at home and had no chance in that game. So now they go on the road to Tempe. Arizona State's a 22-point favorite in that game. And right now, unless something crazy happens, and I mean crazy, Jonathan Smith's probably not going to win a conference game in his first year. I mean, there's not going to be a game where Oregon State's not going to be a double-digit underdog in this conference. Everybody else in the North is going to be at least a 2-touchdown favorite against them. I don't believe they play UCLA, which would be their only chance at getting a win. Arizona State is a bottom-tier team in the conference, and they're still 22-point favorites against the Beavs. So the Beavs have no chance of going on the road and getting a win, especially if their quarterback's going to be out again. And I just don't see Jonathan Smith pulling out the win. Now, this is the other interesting game. USC, who I think showed some flashes last week against Washington State as to why, you know, they're still a team that you got to pay attention to, is on the road against Arizona. And Arizona looked better, but they played Oregon State. They played an FCS team before that, but the first two games of the season looked absolutely horrendous. USC's losses are to Stanford, who's a top 10 team in the country, and to Texas, who just beat TCU and is back into the top 25. So for some reason, USC is only a field goal favorite on the road against Arizona. The Pac-12 has got to be driving Vegas absolutely crazy. Just absolutely crazy. I like USC in that game. I think USC wins handily. I'm not quite sure what that 3-point spread is all about. Arizona has done nothing. I mean, they looked better against Oregon State, but Oregon State is years away from being competitive in this conference. So I think Chip Kelly moves to 0-4 tonight against Colorado. I like the Cougs as home underdogs against Utah. Stanford's got to get a win against Notre Dame. Notre Dame, by the way, almost a touchdown favorite in that game. Actually, the line's moved down to about 5.5. But I think Stanford, I mean, that win at Autzen Stadium reignited some legitimate juice for them. A lot of teams maybe have a hangover, but for Stanford, you snatched victory out of the jaws of defeat. They were done. Stick a fork in them. They were done. And they got a jolt of energy after they get that win against Oregon. They're back in the Pac-12 conference race, but in the national college football playoff race. and Washington has to hold up for the conference. They've been winning ugly all season long. Tough loss against Auburn, but they haven't blown anybody out. I'm going to be very interested to see. I think the Huskies win, but I'm going to be very interested to see if the Huskies can cover that 17-point spread. The Beavs have no chance on the road, and I like USC. I think USC beats Arizona. I think they beat them fairly handily. So there you go. Those are the Pac-12 slate. That's the matchups that matter. When we come back, we have got the Q&A. We've got some very interesting Q&A questions coming your way. Also, don't forget that this podcast is available at thatcast.com, iTunes, Spotify, and you can download this podcast with others, such as the Wake Up and Win podcast with Devon Pouncey. Who's that guy? Who's this guy, Devon Pouncey? Actually, it's a very good podcast. There's at some point, me and Devon have to do a crossover event. I don't know how it's going to happen, but the people who are in charge have to find a way. We have to do a crossover event. The No Huddle Wake Up and Win crossover event is going to be happening one day. So check out my boy Pounce's podcast. He's with me here on the ThatCast podcast network, thatcast.com. Back to wrap it up for the Friday Q&A. I'm Justin Myers. This is the No Huddle.
Find the growing lineup of ThatCast Network podcasts and videocasts at ThatCast.com. Now, back to Justin Myers and the No Huddle.
All right, No Huddle podcast wrapping up here on a Friday. And this is, it's some of my favorite stuff of the week. It's you guys reaching out to me on Twitter. I ask for questions, whether they have anything to do with football or not. And we usually get into some fun stuff. So here it is. This is the Friday Q&A. We'll start with a football question from, I don't know if anybody's heard of this guy. He's got a lot of followers on Twitter, but somebody named John Canzano. I never heard of him, but apparently he's got a ton of followers on Twitter. But he reached out. Canzano wants to know. He says, can you make a straight-faced and justifiable argument for Justin Herbert to stay beyond the season at Oregon? As much as I want to, I just can't do it. I've made this argument time and time again, but after Stanford, it's time for Oregon fans to enjoy Herbert while he lasts, because he is not coming back for another season. Couple of reasons, though. And I see why Oregon fans would say that he's always been an Oregon guy. And I've heard theories that, oh, he wants to play with his brother. But before, it's almost like before Stanford and after Stanford. That loss for Oregon is devastating, but that game was so fortunate for Justin Herbert, because everybody across the college football slate was not good. Everybody was watching that game. And by the third quarter, everybody, NFL scouts, college football media members, have all made the decision that Herbert's the best quarterback in the country. Now, the problem is he's never won a big game. But I don't know if you watched Thursday Night Football last night, but Jared Goff looks pretty doggone good. Can't remember a big game he won in college football. Pat Mahomes looks pretty good. Can you tell me a big game that Pat Mahomes won in college when he was at Texas Tech? No, because it doesn't translate that way. Arm strength, size, athleticism, poise. Herbert's the full package. And here's the other thing, and this is where Oregon fans don't like it, but it is the truth. There's no reason for Justin Herbert to be loyal to Oregon. Why? Because Oregon has not been loyal to him. He came in as a Mark Helfrich recruit, and Mark Helfrich then started him the second half of the season back in 2016, and Helfrich gets fired. So then Oregon hires Willie Taggart. And while you can't really put the blame on Oregon for Taggart leaving to Florida State, they did hire a guy who was not long for Eugene. Plus a broken collarbone cost him a chunk of one more season. And then Taggart leaves, and Oregon's got to scramble and find a third coach in 3 years with its most talented, in terms of quarterbacking skills, quarterback they maybe have ever had. So if I'm Herbert, why am I sticking around? Nobody has showed me any loyalty. This guy's had three coaches, three play callers in three different seasons. And he's supposed to stick around because he loves Oregon? I'm sure he loves his teammates, but that paycheck is very, very influential when it comes to the NFL. And if you care at all about Justin Herbert's well-being and wish him well at all as an Oregon fan, you say, thank you for the good times. Now go to the NFL. Because there's no justifiable argument, just like in John's question, there's no justifiable argument that an Oregon fan can have other than we want him to stay for another year. That's the only one. And if that's your position, great, own it. Now we want him to stay for, it doesn't do any good for him. Really doesn't do any good for the program. I mean, think about what it would mean for the program recruiting-wise if you get the number one overall pick. Herbert's gone, guys. He's leaving. And he should. These are called once-in-a-lifetime opportunities. That guy is gone. All right, here we go. Next question. This one is from Bill. It says, a better watch party. The one you host and you control the TV, the food, etc., or the one you go to, just show up and leave when you want? This is a very tough question. Because on one hand, I want control of the TV. Now, if we're all there to watch one specific game, that's fine. But college football, the beauty of it is there's so many other games going on. And it's not like the NFL, where they all start and end at the same time. It's all over the place. But then you have to bring people over to your house. You have to do all the prep. You have to do all the cooking. And then you have to do all the cleaning. And then there's always that weird guy that stays just a little bit too late. Like the game's over and he's still hanging around and still talking to you. And everybody else is gone. You're ready to pack it up and go to bed. And there's always one guy that's just hanging out there. I am a control freak. But I think it's still better to go to the watch party where you're not in control of the TV. Maybe you can be influential. You got to play politics a little bit. We've all been there, right? Where you go to the watch party and you got to like politicize the room and get some people on your side. Hey, don't you want to check out the end of this this top 25, this Stanford Notre Dame game? I mean, it's just a touchdown game. You want to check it out? Anybody got money on that game? You got to convince people. But boom, pack up, leave, go. Also, by the way, if you are going to a person's house for a watch party, this is the rule. Okay, unless otherwise stated, unless told by the homeowner, whatever you bring into the house stays in the house. Don't be the guy who brings a 12-pack of beer, drinks 7 of them, and then takes 5 home. Like, don't do that. The only time is if somebody says, look, we're never going to drink this. Please take it home. But whatever, don't bring anything to a watch party that you're not prepared to have stay there forever. There are pluses and minuses on both of these, but I still say I would rather go to a watch party. I don't want to do the dishes. I can bring food that I like. And on top of that, once the game's over, I'm out and I'm bouncing. Now, this one gets very, very complex and complicated. And I put, again, this is from our buddy Saban, who asks me these questions each and every week. And I get mad at him because I spend way too much time breaking all this down. But I did. He says, if each Pac-12 team were a national chain restaurant, what restaurant would each be? Well, Saban, I have done it again. As I am now pulling up the notes on my phone, because I went through the entire conference. And let's start. I'm going to go north to south. So we're going to start all the way up at Washington State. Washington State, I picked Applebee's. There's nothing wrong with it. Nothing wrong with Applebee's. There's nothing wrong with Washington State. But it's never going to be a place you rave about. You know, the Cougs are good, but they're never going to be great. They've had some tough times, sure, but then they bounce back, but they're never going to take that extra little step. There's nothing special about Washington State. Applebee's is fine. If somebody says, hey, let's meet up at Applebee's, it's not the best place to go to, but there are plenty of worse places, but there's just nothing special about it. Good. Sometimes you get half-price apps for happy hour. It's got some pluses, but it's just not a place you ever look forward to going. Moving on to Washington. Washington is the Olive Garden, and I'll tell you exactly why. You ever walked into an Olive Garden? They think they are so much better than they actually are. The waitresses and the waiters wear like shirts and ties, and they got fancy tablecloths, and they've got this, look, this decor to make it look like an Italian villa. But in the end, it's just a bunch of cheap spaghetti. Sure, they give you unlimited breadsticks to keep you around, but in the end, it's just bad Italian food. Sorry, Huskies, you think you're a whole lot better than you actually are. See, Olive Garden thinks they are some fancy Italian bistro that they just then go out nationwide. Just like Washington thinks they're as good as Alabama or Ohio State or Michigan, that they're on that level. But really, you're just Olive Garden. Sorry. All right, Corvallis. Oregon State, Sherry's. It's just there. It's a last resort. Usually after you've had probably one too many to drink. Usually about 3 in the morning. Nobody ever has a meal at Sherry's and then afterwards says, man, that was a great meal. Or you never have a... Anytime you go to Sherry's, you usually kind of regret it the next day. But you know what? Enough people go there that they still keep them open. And by the way, if you go to a game in Corvallis lately, it looks kind of like the clientele at Sherry's. It's kind of a little weird. So yeah, it's fine for what it is. It's just there. Next up, Oregon. Oregon's Red Robin. And I'll tell you why Oregon is Red Robin. Red Robin, with the refillable fries and the better-than-you'd-expect burgers, shouldn't work, but it just does. I don't know why I like Red Robin so much. I don't know why Oregon football in a state where they don't have a big time high school football program and why it all works, but it just does. You look at all these chain restaurants, right? And then you look at all these college football teams, and Oregon has that one little thing that stands out. They got that style. They got that Nike influence, that cool factor. You got all these chain restaurants, right? What does Red Robin have that none of them have? They let you refill the fries. Oregon and their style is equivalent to the refillable fries of college football. All right, moving down. let's see. Should we go to Colorado? Colorado is Sizzler. It was really good in the 80s and the 90s, and it has really fallen off as of late. I mean, you go back to Colorado, national champions in 1989. You remember Rashawn Salaam wins the Heisman in the early 90s. Cordell Stewart with the Hail Mary pass against Michigan. And what since then? Nah, not much. That's the Sizzler. Sizzler was great in the 80s. Steak and all-you-can-eat shrimp, and you get that piece of cheese toast. But when was the last time, really, you went to one? Or even seen one? Utah is Red Lobster. Utah, over the last, 15 years, had one great season. One great season as a team out of the Mountain West, went to the Sugar Bowl, they beat Alabama, and kind of proved that they were one of the top-tier non-Power 5 teams. And then they joined the Pac-12 and has done nothing. Everybody, I think, has had one good experience at Red Lobster. And then every time you go back, you try to relive that experience, and it just doesn't hold up. Just one time you went to Red Lobster and you got, for whatever, the Cheddar Bay biscuits were perfect. And then you went back and you just can't recreate that one time. That's Utah. There's better places to go. Just like Utah came into the Pac-12 and they're just better teams. So Utah's Red Lobster. All right, moving down, let's go to Stanford. Stanford is Outback Steakhouse. It's just big. Okay, Stanford football is just big. After you play Stanford, you're going to be hurting. After you have a meal at Outback Steakhouse, you're not going to feel comfortable. It's just a ton of food. Bloomin' onions, steak, ribs, chicken. It's just big. So Stanford's Outback Steakhouse. Cal is Panera Bread. All right? Because Cal truly believes that they are on a higher level intellectually and culturally than everybody else. But really, if you've ever been to Panera Bread, it's fancy Subway, okay? It's fancy Subway. I mean, it's cute that Cal and Berkeley, and they think that just intellectually and culturally and progressively that they're ahead of everybody else, just like Panera Bread thinks that they're better than everybody else. But in the end, you're just making sandwiches. So Cal is Panera Bread. Moving down, USC, Cheesecake Factory. Why? Because Cheesecake Factory has everything, and USC just has everything. When it comes to football, they've always got the best players. They've got the money. They've got the tradition. They've just got everything. And I'm not saying that every time you go to Cheesecake Factory, it's great. That's why USC is having a little bit of a dip. Everybody's gone to Cheesecake Factory and ordered the wrong thing at least once. But you know what? You'll always end up going back. And with USC, even in a couple of down years, they always end up coming back. Why? Because they just got everything. So USC is Cheesecake Factory. UCLA is Chipotle. Here's why. Every time, especially in the last couple of years, if you've gotten Chipotle, you just expect more from it. It should work. Everything about Chipotle should work. It's Subway with burritos. How could you go wrong? But for whatever reason, it's just something missing. It just doesn't quite live up to a taco truck, especially here in Portland. Some of the best taco trucks or burrito places. Chipotle, it's mass produced. It just doesn't quite. UCLA should work. You're in Westwood. You've got money. You've got a huge campus. But for whatever reason, it just doesn't quite work. It's because there's no football culture at UCLA. And Chipotle is like taking Mexican food and then stripping away all of the culture. That's what it is. So UCLA is Chipotle. I got two more. You're going to love these. Arizona State. How could Arizona State beat anything other than Hooters? And if you've ever been to a Hooters or if you've ever been to Tempe, you know exactly what I mean. Arizona State's Hooters. All right. You think it's a cool place to go, but in the end, you're just going there for one reason. In Arizona State, there's only really one reason you're going to ASU, and that's because you want to party. And you want to go to Hooters to party. Finally, Arizona. Arizona's Buffalo Wild Wings. Same crappy food, just without the Hooters girls. Arizona's it's the same crappy climate, but just there's no party girls like there is at Arizona State. So Buffalo Wild Wings is what I pick for Arizona. There you go. There's the Pac-12 as national chain restaurants. You are welcome. All right, that's going to do it for us here at the No Huddle. Like I mentioned, iTunes, Spotify, get on there, rate, review, tell the people, let them know what we're doing here. Tell a friend, tell your family, tell two strangers, and we will talk to you again coming up on Monday. Monday reaction from Oregon down at Cal. We are, as always, a production of the ThatCast Podcast Network. Download and subscribe at ThatCast.com, or as I mentioned, find us on iTunes, find us on Spotify. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you next week. This is the No Huddle Podcast.
Discover the growing lineup of ThatCast Network podcasts and videocasts at ThatCast.com.